Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed, right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host, 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. The woman in Indiana who was slapping her daughter, striking out at her daughter in the car, and of course it made extraordinary national news. The video was very compelling. Here's this mom completely out of control, lashing out at her daughter. And I made a prediction on Friday night. We talked about it Monday night. And boy, did it get some people angry. So if there's anybody out there who would like to talk further about that, feel free to call in 1-800-836-9278. But I'd like to, just to recap, Friday night, after we'd all seen the video of the mother going crazy against her four-year-old daughter, and the calls were unanimous in the media by government officials, prosecutors, child abuse experts, that that girl has to be taken away from her family, I pointed out, well, first off, we don't know that there's any injuries to the girl. The mother was out of control, yeah. But on Friday night, before the girl was found, before the mother turned herself in, I made a prediction on the radio that when we do find the girl, we'll find out that she has no broken teeth, no broken nose, no black eyes, and no injuries. And I am thankful, of course, for the sake of that little girl, that she's been found and a doctor has ruled her to be without injury after examining her. So that's great news. So later in the show, later in the next half hour, feel free to call in and we'll follow up on that topic, because I know some people got rather upset at my take on the story, that if the child isn't injured, that there's not grounds to take the daughter away from the family and put her into a foster home. But right now, I want to change channels. Right now, change channels. This year, Mel Gibson portrayed a war hero from a war that produced few heroes, from the Vietnam War. He was Lieutenant Colonel Hal Moore in the major motion picture We Were Soldiers. And Moore's real-life daughter, we interviewed on the show, she was portrayed in the film, and her dad is trying to explain to his little four-year-old girl what war is. It was quite a moving scene, and it was neat to have her on the show. And then we interviewed Colonel David Hackworth, came on the program, one of America's most highly decorated soldiers. And, of course, we spoke about his experience in Vietnam, but mostly about the current war on terror. And I thought that it'd be worthwhile to back up and talk about the Vietnam War itself. About the Vietnam War itself, there's a documentary series that has not yet been seen nationally, and it's called The Long Way Home Project. And two of the segments, in fact, all the segments are really interesting, but two of the segments are titled How We Won the War. That's segment number two. And the third is How We Lost the War. Now I'm curious to ask the producer of this series, how can we have two segments, how we won the war and how we lost the war? Perhaps Calvin Crane, could you explain that to us?
Hi, Bob. Well, first of all, thank you for having us on our show.
You're welcome.
To talk about the Long Way Home Project. And
yes,
you've kind of hit on maybe the crux of the paradox, if you will, on the Vietnam War era, in the sense that we both won and lost a war all in the same war. Mm. The film, the one-hour film entitled How We Won the War, is essentially the story of how after the Tet Offensive and after General Abrams took over command in Vietnam, by the summer of 1969, maybe fall of 1969, the Viet Cong and the Ninh Vietnam were basically on the run, and the countryside had been returned to Vietnamese, South Vietnamese hands, so that I could jump on my 50cc motorcycle and drive just about anywhere in the country, vis-a-vis when I first arrived in early 1968, right around the time of the Tet Offensive. Obviously, you didn't want to set foot out of your bunker, if you will.
Right. Now, Calvin, you were there for over 2 years.
That's right, sir.
You were a photojournalist assigned to the State Department, and you really had quite a time there. And so at least I want my audience to know that you bring some firsthand perspective to this documentary series.
Although I should mention, Bob, that I myself had no clue as to the real facts of how the war was, fought. And even many of the myths about the veterans themselves, I myself was not even aware. It was my producer wife, Crystal Crane, who is the daughter of a veteran, that really, you know, after years of, you know, sort of listening to one version of the war, we decided to investigate what the truth really might be.
Yeah, your first segment, the first 1 hour, is Men versus Myth.
That's right.
And so you got the myth is that the people who went over to fight in Vietnam, well, they were the drug addicts and the baby killers, and
which is a terrible shame. You know, I can honestly say to most of your listeners who the Vietnam veterans were and are and why they fought is almost 180 degrees from what they think.
From what we have heard.
That's right.
All right, I'd like you to profile for us who it was that went over to Vietnam to fight for the freedom of the South Vietnamese, to protect them from the communists and to protect us from the spread of communism. Who were those people who went and fought? And then also, who were the people who refused to go? If you could do both of those for us.
Well, I don't know many people who refused to go, and I can only speculate on who they were, but I know now especially who the veterans really are. There were 2.6 million of us that actually served in-country, and that does not include hundreds of thousands of more Navy sailors and Air Force airmen that served in theater, and nor does it include the total of almost 10 million American servicemen and women that served during the Vietnam era. But 2.6 million of us actually served in-country. 74.9 of us were volunteers.
Now, three-quarters of the group volunteering to go versus conscripted, as for previous wars, what does that volunteerism rate, how does that compare to other wars?
Well, World War II, 34%.
Wow.
Which is exactly, and that doesn't take anything away, and I don't mean to take anything away from the draftees who answered their country's call.
No.
That's not fair to do that, but it just shows you the sort of this 180-degree view that people have of who the veterans were. 97% came back with an honorable discharge. They were the highest-educated fighting force that America had ever fielded.
Really? You mean as far as the average
education
level of education they had
very
achieved?
Very high.
Calvin, if you could hold on, we'll be right back.
Great.
Hey, this is Bob Enyart, pastor of Denver Bible Church, and I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Those of you friends listening in Rochester, New York, Indianapolis, Springfield, Massachusetts, South Bend, Indiana, Denver, Colorado, and those listening on the web at kgov.com, it's a difficult time to raise kids, and at Denver Bible Church, it seems like most of our families have young kids, and we have some materials that could really help a family who's trying to figure out how to raise kids. We've got two things I want to tell you about. One is a book and a cassette tape called To Train Up a Child. The book is by Michael and Debbie Pearl, and the cassette tape, it's one of the tapes we produced here, called Tyrant Dad. Tyrant Dad, how to raise kids when society around us is becoming, well, dangerous to the welfare of children, and as a good dad, you're always saying no. How do you survive in that situation? How do you grow up? How do you grow up your kids? How do you have them grow up in such a way that even though you're a disciplinarian, they still love you? Well, it turns out it's not that difficult as long as you follow a few simple principles. So call us up 1-888-8-ENYART, 1-888-836-9278. You could order the kit, the book, and the tape to train up a child. And we've got a new series, an album of audio cassettes called Raising Cain. So for either of those, give us a call. Chat with our whoever answers the phone. They'll talk to you about what we've got. 1-888-8-NYARD. And then also, for those of you, now our radio affiliates have left us for local spots, but for those of you listening over the internet at kgov.com or Information Radio Network, IRN, or WHME in South Bend, Indiana, just a little bit more about our album. There are 6 cassette tapes in this Raising Cain. And boy, is it fascinating. In America, we use significantly more Ritalin for kids than any other country in the world. And in fact, over a 5-year period, we about tripled the number of kids on Ritalin to now it's 11.5 million kids in America. Is your kid one of those? And if so, if you're not happy, what can you do about us? Call us 1-888-8-NYARD. We're back, Bob and Yurt Live, with Calvin Crane on the line, a producer of a documentary series on the Vietnam War called The Long Way Home Project. So, Calvin, we just found out that the volunteerism rate was high and the education level of the men who went and fought in Vietnam was high compared to other wars also.
Yes, and I might mention to your listeners, and I know you have many of them, Bob, that if they would go to vnwar.com, if they have access to a computer, as in vietnamwar.com, so it's vnwar.com, there's a button on there that will take them to references and statistics, and they can see all of some of our basic research right on the site.
All right, vnwar.com. I'm at that site right now.
Good. Boy, you're quick.
See that? And the statistics, where do I find those?
That upper left-hand button there. Do you see it?
The facts, not the myths.
Yeah, just click on that, and you'll see a whole plethora of very interesting facts. You know, one of the things that you always hear people talking about is the racial makeup of soldiers. Al Gore's comment about the further in the field that you got, the blacker you got. And while it's true, our African-American soldiers served honorably and well in Vietnam. In fact, we had
10.6% of them.
Of them came back with a Medal of Honor. Well, in fact, the real truth is about 90% of the soldiers that served in Vietnam were of white. About 10%, roughly, were African-American.
Which modeled the American population demographics to some extent, not exactly.
That's right, at the time. You know, it's not none of these statistics should really be a surprise. It's like the education level. Of course, the education level of soldiers in Vietnam was much higher than World War II or Korea because the education level in the country. So really the truth is that the soldiers in Vietnam were not very much different than any soldiers that have served America in the 20th century.
And then we heard one of the myths is that it's all the rich kids were spared any risky service, but here you've got a stat, 26% of combat deaths came from the families in the highest third of income levels.
Well, once again, and you look at that, the guys that were the helicopter pilots and the platoon leaders in the infantry, both Marine Corps and the Army, a lot of these fellows came from fairly high income brackets. They had college degrees. They were from parents that had fought in World War II. They were very motivated. And, of course, those types of individuals, the pilots, did take a higher rate of casualties than overall. So it's not a real big surprise, once again. What is surprising is this continued myth that the soldiers that went to Vietnam were from the lower economic status or they were a large number of minorities and they came back psychologically disturbed. None of this is true.
Wow. Okay, so now the how we won the war and how we lost the war, you've already mentioned the Tet Offensive, 1969 Viet Cong, the North Vietnamese communists were on the run. So I don't think most Americans know that we did as well as we did militarily. Calvin Crane, on this show, on Bob and Eric Live, I've said on many of occasions that we could have militarily won that war. We lost the war in Washington and in the media.
Well, and that's to a large extent true. Unfortunately, you know, the Vietnam War was really a war that we walked away from. If I might take you right to the very end of the war, American combat troops withdrawn in 1972,
right.
And then the peace treaty, so-called peace treaty, in 1973, which, of course, was a cue to the North Vietnamese communists and their Soviet supporters and Chinese supporters to gear up for one final assault on South Vietnam, which they did in 1975. And, of course, you know, the Watergate scandal, the recession brought on by the Yom Kippur War, all of those circumstances, and, of course, an election in Congress, which brought in a lot of congressmen that had sort of come in on some type of a peace platform.
Right.
What you had is a very hostile Congress
mm-hmm.
that, in fact, was way out ahead of American public opinion at that time. And
because
they basically
decided
to cut off the South Vietnamese.
Yeah, Calvin, for the most part, Americans were against communism.
Yes, they were.
And while the people, the elite in the media didn't really believe it, the average American believed that the communist regimes had murdered many, even millions of their own people. They denied people freedom of speech and religion and travel, and that they were basically criminal regimes. And so fighting against communism was something that resonated with a lot of normal Americans.
Yes. In fact, I think it had started to dawn on the average American that we had suffered greatly and sacrificed greatly in World War II, and yet at the end of World War II, there were far more people in the world under tyranny than there were at the start.
Right.
I mean, it's one of those horrible truths that we freed Japan from themselves,
and we
freed Western Europe, and the rest of the world basically went to heck in a handbasket.
Was enslaved, and maybe General Patton was right that the war wasn't quite over when we thought it was over.
Maybe he was.
Certainly, we could have freed over 100 million people from
Eastern Europe
from a half a century of barbarism and slavery.
Yeah, it is really it's one of those things that I don't think in the long run of history, this is digressing from the Vietnam War era,
right,
obviously.
Right.
The long run of history is not going to look too kindly on how World War II actually ended mm-hmm. and what happened after that.
Well, Calvin, I appreciate you saying this. Here on this show, we consider ourselves somewhat extreme conservatives, and it's pleasant to hear.
All I have to do is look at the facts, Bob.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. To hear somebody right out of the filmmaking industry come along and support some of the clearest conclusions we've drawn.
Well, I think the mood of the country is changing a little bit because my producer wife, Crystal Crane, who was really the impetus for this whole thing, she kind of mm-hmm. goaded me into it, insisted on entering this film series in the Houston International Film Festival, and I was positive we would win nothing.
Right.
We walked away with their top award for documentary television series. So something is changing in the country, I think, Bob.
Yeah, right. Since September 11th. In fact, your documentary has not aired nationally. Is that right?
That's right. In fact, it's kind of strange. Every distributor we kind of talk to is amazed that it hasn't. But really, if you look at what the networks and even the cable channels have been producing for a quarter of a century following the war,
right.
The networks for a longer period, and the cable channels more recently.
This would be egg on their face.
Yeah, it would really fly in the face of everything they've produced. It
right.
would be like recanting on everything that they've aired.
So you're up against the political correctness, a generational political correctness. How about the final segment, the new diaspora?
Yeah, that's a very interesting segment. One of the things that, again, my producer wife likes to say that Vietnam was a country, not a war. We often forget there was a very old culture and millions of people involved, of course, that we walked away from the end. Here's a fascinating fact for your listeners. Before the communists took over South Vietnam, virtually no South Vietnamese tried to get out of the country, a few here and there, to go to school, et cetera. After the communists took over, 20% of the population, nearly 20%, attempted to escape, and hundreds of thousands perished on the high seas or trying to attempt a cross-country crossing through Cambodia, which, of course, was then involved in a brutal war, and they perished.
I was still in grammar school when this all happened, but
I remember the most horrific.
The boat people. So the boat people were from this era.
Yes, and they will have, you know, people will have a chance. Your people that purchase the series by going to vnwar.com will have a chance to hear the personal stories and actually experience a reenactment of what it was like to why we'd want to escape and why you put your kids at risk.
From the communists, right. And those who fought against the war, the activists, the protesters, like Bill and Hillary Clinton, they pretty much came down on the side that the North Vietnamese were not the bad guys, that we Americans were the bad guys.
A third of a million South Vietnamese were imprisoned in the most brutal concentration camps after the war, and the American left basically applauded.
Calvin, if we could try to squeeze in one question, and we're going to go to to Indianapolis. Dustin, you're on with Calvin Crane.
Hi, Dustin.
Hi, Bob. I'd just like to say that I love the show, and this is a topic that's fascinated me for a long time, primarily because my dad's a Vietnam veteran.
Right.
But I have a theory, and I don't know if this is true.
I don't think I heard the question there.
Okay, Calvin. Dustin, you ask the question, and I'll repeat it.
Okay.
Go ahead, Dustin.
Basically, my theory is that many of the liberal theologians and teachers today are draft dodgers from the 60s.
All right. I'm going to ask that question. We're running out of time. Hey, Calvin, Dustin is fascinated by the topic from Indianapolis. His dad is a Vietnam War vet.
Right.
And he thinks that many of the college professors who teach against the Vietnam War, our effort, were themselves draft dodgers.
Well, I think there's probably some evidence for that. I wish we had the time and money to gather more evidence, but he's probably got the sense of it.
Yeah, I think so. And it's somewhat uncanny. I've found that there is a visceral hatred in America, mostly in the media and in certain elite segments of our society. There's a hatred for those who were anti-communist. If you were anti-communist, you were hated, whereas the communists themselves, who slaughtered tens of millions of people, they had some kind of a warm affinity toward them.
It's a most bizarre way of thinking, Bob.
It really does seem to be. All right, Calvin Crane with Castle Rock. The name of your production company is?
It's called Flickers Films, and the name of the project is The Long Way Home Project. And, of course, they can go to vnwar.com and find out all about it.
All right, I'm going back to that website right now so we can let our audience know. VNWAR, like Vietnam, vnwar.com.
Yes, sir.
And we could order this online. It looks pretty simple here, purchase online.
Yes, and there's... If folks that have access to phones here in the United States, 800 number, 1-800-945-2478, 1-800-945-2478, $69.95 VHS, $79.95 for the entire set on DVD, and we pay priority mail shipping.
Mm-hmm. And, Calvin, I want our audience members to know, because in a couple cities we're newer, I want them to know that this was not a paid infomercial.
No.
We asked you to come on the show because we appreciate the effort you and your wife put into getting the truth out about Vietnam. And
you
guys winning this award and your past, this is obviously quality material. And so I know my family, we're going to order this. And we homeschool our kids.
Excellent.
So this is going to be part of the curriculum.
Excellent.
Thank you, Calvin. I appreciate your time. All right. So we're going to go to the news, and we will be right back. Hey, Bob Enyart here. Welcome to those of you listening via the internet on kgov.com. Let's see. Now, hey, that was fun having Calvin Crane on the show, and I'm looking forward to watching that. $69.95 plus shipping and handling, something like that. That's when you look at it as part of your education, part of if you homeschool kids – part of your history curriculum, it's a great price. And so we're gonna be getting that, and we'll let you know how we like it once we see it. But if you do homeschool, if you have kids and you're not homeschooling, I want to encourage you to think about it. And this also is not a paid commercial, but we use Alpha Omega Publications, and we use Class, C-L-A-S-S. In fact, a dear friend of mine was the founder of Class, and he just died this past year. But we use the curriculum from these two Christian organizations, Alpha Omega Publishing. We use their material for our 16-year-old, Nathaniel. And for our 4-year-old, Zachary, we're using the materials from Class, Christian Liberty Academy, their school. And I tell you, we could not be happier with the materials from both of those organizations. And here at our home, we have supplemented the curriculum for our 16-year-old. They have their own Bible curriculum, but we're using something. We took a cue from many of our homeschool families out there around the country who for years now, for 5 years, they've been telling us what they use in their curriculum for teaching the Bible, and they're using the plot. Now, that just blows me away. That is so neat to hear. But there are families all over the country that are so thrilled that their kids have a solid foundation in the Bible because they've gone through the plot. And some families have used the manuscript exclusively, only the manuscript. Others have used the audio tapes along with the manuscript. And the audio tapes, the plot album has 6 tapes, and so about a half hour each side. And then the tree, 6 tapes, a half hour each side. And that's 24 class presentations, basically. And then the manuscript itself is quite a textbook, so think about that. We are back. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-N-YART, 1-800-836-9278. That's if you'd like to get through. And the lines are open because of the interview. Some people called in early on, and we told them we'd be doing an interview for a half hour. So we took Dustin's call just at that last moment. But feel free to call us now, either about the Vietnam War or communism. Why is it that good people are opposed to communism and bad people support communism? Why is that? Why is that? If communism holds a warm place in your heart, that's an indication that you have a bad heart. That you have a bad heart. So why is it that that communism is bad, and that it actually is a litmus test? You could find out about somebody whether they basically know right from wrong on how they feel about communism. My son, Josiah, 19 years old, he's been in New Jersey for a year working with my brother, and we talk on a regular basis. Talked to him today. He's thinking about going to England for a couple months. But anyway, my son, Josiah, pointed out to me that he had a friend from, let me get this right now, his friend was from Belarus. Or the Ukraine. No, he's from the Ukraine. And he noticed an accent from someone that he had just met at a party. And he realized she was from the Ukraine. So he went over to her, and his better American accent, he asked, "So where are you from?" And she said, "Russia." And he said, "Oh, you mean you're a communist?" She said Russian. Now, he knew she was from the Ukraine. He could tell by her vocabulary, her accent. And so he said, "So where are you from?" And she said, "Russia." And he said, "Oh, you mean you're a communist?" Now, I love when people are that insightful. I just love it. My son Josiah told me the story, and he was just giddy with excitement of that he understands the dynamics of what was going on, because the Russians, the communists in Russia, took over Eastern Europe. They enslaved tens of millions of people in their Soviet Union, and they robbed them of their freedom, their economic opportunity, their opportunity to be educated well, and freedom of speech and religion. And they murdered 20 million people. And so anybody from the Ukraine today who says, well, I'm Russian, I'm from Russia, obviously that person does not have the hatred of communist that they should have. So, all right, we're going to go to two calls in a row from Indiana, Daryl and then Craig. First, Daryl in Napanee, Indiana. Speak your mind.
Hey, Bob. How you doing tonight?
Doing well, sir.
I'd just like to say I really enjoyed your first segment. I'd like to say that I'm a Christian, and I am very proud that my Uncle Dave fought in Vietnam.
All right.
My grandfather fought in Korea, and my great-uncle Jim was killed in the island of Luzon in the Philippines in World War II.
Wow.
And I am extremely proud of the fact that they fought for their country.
Right. They fought for their country, and they fought against enemies of freedom and justice.
They fought against everything that was evil.
So, you know, there were people who fought for their country, say, Japanese soldiers, who were fighting for the country who were doing wrong, and there were North Vietnamese men who fought for their country who were doing wrong and should today be ashamed that they fought for their country, just like Hitler's soldiers should be ashamed. But your family members fought against the enemy out of patriotism and loyalty for their country in wars that were just.
That's right.
All right. So anything else there?
Oh, there's something else. I live about, I'd say, 12 to 14 miles away from Mishawaka, Indiana, where the Madeline Toogood deal went on. That's the one that savagely beat her kid in the vehicle. And around here, she's practically becoming a folk hero.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's
well,
just...
Daryl, let's now, did you hear what I said about her Friday night and Monday night?
No, I didn't get a chance to catch
that. Well, let me repeat, because maybe you and I could debate a little.
Oh, all right. I like that.
Friday night, before the woman had turned herself in, I made a prediction on the air. The prediction was, while everybody on every news station around in the country was saying that that girl has to be taken away from the family, I made a prediction that when we find the girl, she will have no broken teeth, no broken nose. She'll have no swollen up eyes, not even a bloody nose. She'll have no injuries.
Mm-hmm.
That was my prediction. Now, the way it was reported, you would think the girl was taken immediately to an emergency room or else she'd be dead. And I saw the video of what the mother was doing, and the mother was out of control.
She totally lost it.
Yeah, she totally lost it. She was out of control. That mother needs counseling.
She does.
She needs help.
That's the important thing, but I'm definitely not in favor of taking the child away from her.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear you say that. And the point I made was, if that video had captured a mother giving a perfectly valid spanking to her child,
we'd pretty much be in the same situation that we are now.
Yeah, we'd be in exactly the same. In fact, it'd be worse for us.
It probably, yeah.
Right, it'd be worse for us, and the media would be just as outraged that anyone would dare hit a child. Now, this woman was out of control, but the reason I made my prediction, because in the video, how they said she punched her at least 12 times in the head, she smacked her, she did all this, and I thought if a woman that big and that obviously strong had punched a 4-year-old girl in the face, her face would be just a mutilated pile of flesh.
It would be. That part is true, yes.
Right. So what was obvious to me that this mother was out of control, but even in her out of control, she was restraining herself and not hitting her daughter with full punches to the face.
I agree. If she wanted to do damage, she most definitely could have.
Oh, right. So even in her out of control way, she did restrain herself, and I'm thankful for the daughter, that the daughter was not severely injured.
Oh,
and the mom, I think, now is going to, you know, seriously consider her problem with anger.
Yeah, she definitely needs some sort of anger management classes and counseling.
But how is it that the locals are turning the woman into a hero? How is that?
Well, the thing is, she's been on local TV. I mean, I saw her on, I believe, Fox News the other day, and she was saying, you know, she was getting up and saying, you know, hey, do not punish my child for what I have done. I'm the one who has done the wrong. At least, you know, praise God, she can admit that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, she says, she looked right in the camera and said, you know, just before you spank your child, start to think. So they're going to make her a poster woman against spanking
right.
your child.
You are right. You are right. Just like the media, like the NOW and all these feminists.
Yeah.
They love, who's the woman in Texas who killed her, drowned her kids? Her
Andrea
father?
Yates.
Andrea Yates. She became a poster child.
She became a poster child for PMS or menopause or whatever.
Yeah, right. Because after they commit their crimes, then they're saying the right thing and the media loves them.
Exactly. They eat it up.
Right. And so, great point. If this woman says the right thing, she'll really get off virtually scot-free.
Yeah.
She'll end up with a 12-week parenting class from the government, something like that. And we realize that in our situation, Daryl, I don't know if you know that I had been charged with child abuse.
I was aware of that, yes.
How many years ago? 8 years ago.
Definitely, don't get me wrong here. I'm definitely not against spanking a child, I believe there should be a distinction made between totally going off the handle and abusing a child versus spanking them.
Well, right, the threshold is injuries.
Exactly.
If you break a child's bones, you burn the child, you lacerate the child. There's blood. You need medical care. You've actually injured the child, then it's a crime. It's an assault. And we as Christian conservatives would punish that parent or that person far more severely than the liberals would.
Oh, more than likely, yes.
Right. You beat a child to death today, and you might not even go to jail. And if you do go to jail, you're going to watch cable TV and play volleyball.
Yeah, you're definitely going to have access to all the amenities of life.
Yeah. Including pornography and gambling, and that's if you beat a child to death. We wouldn't do that as Christian conservatives. But I want to compare the way this woman is speaking now to how my wife and I presented ourselves through the media in our terrible situation. Do you have another minute?
I have as long as you need.
Okay, let's try to do it quickly. But I gave my stepson 5 swats on the backside. Actually, it was a week before I married his mother, Cheryl.
Oh, he must have got out of line then.
Oh, yeah, he did. He's a neat kid, you know, and he loves and respects me to this day. And we had a good relationship at the time, and we had a great relationship over the next year and 4 jury trials. But finally, we won our appeal, and then I lost the next trial and the next appeal, and I went to jail for a couple months. And jail ministry was great, but through all that, my stepson and I have an excellent relationship, and he loves me and he respects me, and we're thrilled about that.
Well, praise God.
Yeah, absolutely, praise God. And, you know, the liberals won the trial, but we're winning the souls.
That's right. I agree.
Of our kids. So we got to go to a break. We'll be right back. All right, this is a live commercial break going out, not on the radio, but just to those listening on the internet at kgov.com. Hey, it's neat to have you guys tuning in. Thanks for making KGov such a success. And since it's a live commercial break, I could give a message to Daryl. Hey, Daryl, when we get back on the air, I'm going to ask you to hold a moment while I go to Craig in Bremen. Check the spelling on Craig City. Make sure we got the right spelling, because Craig has been holding for so long, and then I'll come back to you, Daryl, right after Craig. But so if you can hang on, please do. For those who are interested in this topic of raising kids, homeschooling, last commercial break, we talked about the curriculum that we use to homeschool our kids from CLASS, Christian Liberty Academy, and from Alpha Omega Publishing. Two fabulous, just absolutely fabulous homeschool curriculum publishers. And to add to their materials, you could consider some of what we've got here at Bob and Yurt Live. to have a solid foundation of the Bible you're teaching your kids at home, if you are. If you're not, you could show your kids this also, of course, if they go to Christian school. But we've got our God and the Death Penalty video. I'm thinking now about our materials that homeschool parents have told us they've used in teaching their kids. God and the Death Penalty, Mount Moriah. We have had so many families tell us that their young kids love Mount Moriah, the video on the evidence of the resurrection. Now, how could it possibly be that a young kid would like Mount Moriah? I don't know how that could be, because it's mostly an intellectual presentation of the evidence for the resurrection. There's no bells and whistles. It's reasonably well produced, but we didn't do it for kids. But it turns out that kids love it, and the kids that love it, and I'm talking about some young kids, too, who are homeschooled, and of course, homeschool kids end up being as sharp as they can be. What did our four-year-old Zachary, what did he say today? Four-year-old came down into our offices, and Joe Scott was working here with Grandma Connie, and they said, so what are you learning in homeschool? And four-year-old Zachary said, I'm learning consonants, and I already learned vowels, and now I'm learning consonants and the letter S. It was fun. All right, Bob and Yurt live, and I'm going to continue to talk to Daryl. But if Daryl, if you could hold on a minute, I want to get to Craig because he's been on hold for so long on the same topic. So in Bremen, Indiana, Craig, speak your mind.
Yeah, hey Bob, how you doing?
Doing well, sir.
Great. I called in Friday, and I just want to kind of call back and kind of reiterate some things that I'd thought of since then.
Yeah.
I had worked with troubled teens in a center for
delinquents. Oh yeah,
Craig,
we talked about you Monday night.
I heard that. I was kind of blushing, like, oh, Bob's talking about me.
Well, of course, because you had worked with troubled teens, and you found out that kids who went to foster care homes were not necessarily better off than the homes they were taken out of.
Right, exactly. And I have a cousin who, when I went over to his house when we were teenagers, and we got into some trouble and actually ended up down at the police station at midnight, his dad came down and picked us up. The next morning at church, my cousin's face was black and blue from his dad just kind of basically going out of control to some degree.
Yeah, you should not hit a child in the face.
Right.
I mean, God gave them the backside so that we can do proper child rearing.
But I'm sure that this wasn't the first time that his dad had done this inappropriately. And if the government would have seen or someone would have seen it the first time and have pulled this kid out of his home when he was 10, I know that he didn't, from this experience that I had was there with him on, there was no broken bones, no blood. It was just a swollen face.
Yeah.
And the kid knew he was wrong. And so anyway, if the government would have stepped in when he was younger and pulled him out and said, oh, this is an unfit father, unfit situation for this child, it more than likely would have messed him up for life in some form or another.
Right. The kid would have eventually become a loser if the government pulled him out of his
family.
Exactly. Right.
And since then, I mean, his father he's totally changed, because I think that was kind of the height of it. Finally realized how much out of control he was.
Mm-hmm.
And since then has drastically toned down with the rest of his kids, at least from what I see.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of, I just cringe when I hear somebody saying, well, we need to pull that kid out of there. And
right.
Like the government knows best how to raise children.
Right.
And
right. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. So I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. I'd like to hear some other people's thoughts on that.
All right, Craig. Well, we have reported for 10 years on Bob and Yurt Live, problems with the foster care system and that kids are physically and sexually abused.
Yeah, exactly.
As epidemic in the foster care system.
Yeah.
You've got people getting paid by the government by the head. The more kids they take into their home, the more money they get each month.
Exactly.
It's a business.
Yeah.
And you've got men out there who are taking in 12, 15, 17-year-old girls into their home, and it is completely inappropriate.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
God bless you, Bob.
God bless you. Now we'll go back to Daryl. Our phone number, 836-9278. And, Daryl, thanks for holding.
Hey, that's what I do, Bob.
All right. Okay. So, Daryl, I wanted to bounce this off you, the different way my wife Cheryl and I handled ourselves in the media. So eventually I was convicted of child abuse for spanking my stepson 5 swats with my wife's belt on his backside. And he had 3 welts across his backside, which the police came immediately to our home because, you know, my wife had gone through a divorce. And when you have broken families, they're not as safe and secure as intact families. And so it's possible to use the government, the courts, whatever, and, you know, as a weapon against the former spouse. So anyway, after the spanking, within moments, the police were at the door. I had actually left with my 2 kids to go home because we were getting married a week later. And they pulled down the 7-year-old boy's pants and took pictures of his backside.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. And, you know, hundreds of people have seen those pictures in open court. Every TV camera in Denver was...
That's disgusting.
...was in the courtroom, and thankfully the judge told them they couldn't take pictures, you know, of my son's backside. But anyway, that's humiliating for a child.
I would imagine.
Abuse. And let me tell you what the media, the number one accusation... And the way they described what I had done, how they characterized it, was this, that the spanking resulted in broken skin.
Broken skin.
Broken skin. Now, the weird thing is, you'd think if there was broken skin, you'd think maybe there might be blood, the need for stitches, or at least bandages.
Not like you caned the boy.
That the police would have taken him immediately to the emergency room, called the paramedics, because after all, he had broken skin. Well, he didn't have broken skin. They didn't do any of those things. He had 3 red marks across his backside, which were the result of a good spanking. And so my wife and I knew that if we went to court and we were humble and repentant, that we could pretty much get away with it. You know, close to get away with it. Versus if we went and said that spanking is right, that would unleash the fury of the prosecutors, social services, the judge, the appellate court system. It would unleash their fury down on our heads.
Yeah.
And we took the fury for really one reason. We did not want other families to hear us saying that it's wrong to spank your kids, because other families would see their children destroyed if they accept that teaching.
Yes.
And so we had a pretty good sense that our kids love God and are eternally secure in they love God. They're going to be, you know, we're going to do as parents the best we can to raise our kids.
I hear what you're saying, Bob, but the one question I have, and please don't think I'm disagreeing with you in any way.
Yeah, no, go ahead. And fine.
It's your son did something wrong. Madeline Toogood's daughter didn't do anything wrong.
Oh, right.
And I think that's the major distinction between the two.
Very good point, yeah. And I'm not saying any of this to say that, you know, she was right. You know, she was a jerk. She's totally out of control.
Yes.
But just to contrast the way she is playing the system, which she could be speaking out of, you know, 2 sides of her mouth anyway.
Oh, she has a great lawyer.
Yeah. And the lawyer is undoubtedly, you know, told her exactly what to say, prepared her.
Oh, he sits right next to her every time.
Right. So, hey, Daryl, thank you very much.
Hey, God bless, Bob.
I appreciate your call.
All right.
Okay. So 1-800-836-9278. So, yeah, I got to go to jail for 2 months for that spanking, and it was absolutely enjoyable. Jail is a blast. You know, in the Bible, guys go to jail, and they're singing praise songs to the Lord, and that's what jail is like for the most part. Jail is like going on a Baptist retreat for a weekend. That's what jail's like. I remember I went to Denver County Jail for I've got a criminal record a mile long. I went to Denver County Jail for another offense. This was for, what was this for? Oh, protesting abortion at an event where I was knocked to the ground by a 250-pound Planned Parenthood volunteer in a Planned Parenthood uniform. I was knocked to the ground on public property, and as a result, I was convicted, even though we had videotape of the whole event from three different angles, three video cameras going. The prosecutor wouldn't even charge the guy that gave me a full body block to the back. He wouldn't charge him, the Denver city prosecutor. But I got charged with, what did I get charged with? Conspiracy to loiter, was it? I think that was the conspiracy to loiter case. And I was convicted and went to Denver County Jail for about 2 months. And they put me in with the felons, even though I was convicted of misdemeanor. So I went into a big room with about, well, how many? About 70 convicted felons. And my first night there, 10 minutes after I get in, a big black guy says, "All right, it's time for a prayer meeting." And about 20 guys stand in a circle in the middle of this huge dorm room and hold hands, and they pray and they sing worship songs. And that was Denver County Jail in with the felons. Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona. Daryl, speak your mind. Hello, Daryl.
Hi, how's it going?
Going great, sir.
I just wanted to say that when I was growing up, I got spanked about once a week.
Yeah, me too.
That was something I just kind of expected was going to happen for my parents, so I just tried not to do it, do something wrong, so that they would spank me. But I'm a Christian person, and that was kind of the normal thing to happen. So I don't think that was wrong what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it helped me to be who I am now.
Oh, you're saying the spanking in Mishawaka wasn't wrong?
Right, I'm saying that that I needed the correction to be the good person that I am.
Oh,
now.
For you, okay, for the spankings that you got. Oh yeah, my dad spanked us, me and my two brothers, with a belt, and we got spanked on a regular basis. It was pretty much part of our daily routine, and my dad was not a Christian until maybe 5 years before he died, and I'm thrilled with the discipline that he gave us. I'm just thrilled. I very much appreciate the spankings he gave us.
Yeah, the difference between my father and the church that I grew up in, they corrected me before they spanked me.
Hmm.
And my dad didn't have the time to correct me before he spanked me. He just went ahead and say what I did was wrong, and I'm going to give you a spanking.
Right. Well, Daryl, thank you very much for calling in.
No problem.
I appreciate that. At our Denver Bible Church Sunday School this past week. This Sunday morning, we're talking about raising kids. You want to come out if you're in the Denver area Sunday morning for the Sunday School or the sermon. They're both on raising kids. But we said you discipline children only for breaking something that they had been previously taught or instructed in. You don't spank a child. You don't discipline a child for doing something that you had never addressed. But that doesn't mean you have to be creative and think of everything. No. Hey, we're about totally out of time. We got a call from Westminster here. Ronnie.
Yeah, Bob.
Hey, Ronnie, real quick. We have 10 seconds. What's up?
Well, the previous caller you were talking to said that the little girl had done nothing wrong to deserve spanking.
Right.
And you were in the right. Stepson had. I heard that they showed the mother video, security video, that she was running around the store.
Oh, so the girl was out of control. This Bob and it remind you to do right and risk the consequences.